Sometimes the fun begins when the paved road ends. Chevy Silverado 2500 HD is made to work hard and play hard on the road or off. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for details and experience life in HD.
Wednesday, live from the Skyline Studios, high above Columbus and Wacker Drive. This is WGN. Anna DeVlantis here. Hey, I want to get to what is coming up on the show. And then I need to share with you something because I think I've figured something out. It's a pretty huge thing. It has to do with why New Year's resolution diets end right about this time of the year. I figured it out.
Tell me why, because
no,
I have
we'll
failed.
I know. It's a great reason. I want to see if you agree. I want to see if people say that this might have been their problem. If you've gone on the diet or you did pledge to go on the diet, if it ended right about now, I have one reason why I think that is happening to a lot of folks.
I've just been trying to starve myself, but it's not working.
Is that your diet? The starvation diet?
Just trying not to eat.
Guys, just so you know, I had a couple pieces of cake today at lunch. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, you got the cake in the break room?
Yeah.
I miss the cake.
Steve's so tall, he can eat whatever he wants.
It's distributed. It's so true.
That was such a girl term right there. You both went to your crutch. It distributes.
See? Absolutely. All right, here's what's coming up on the show. Then tell me if you agree with me on this whole thing. So coming up on the show, we will talk about shoreline erosion, you know, the beach erosion that has been in the news lately with the near record high lake levels in Lake Michigan. A real problem. And there's a pledge now also, in addition, to ban all plastics near Lake Michigan. So if you went to the beach, if you went to the walking paths, the parks, that you wouldn't be able to bring bottled water, anything plastic. There's a reason for that, and they have done studies on what's happening inside Lake Michigan, what they're finding. We're going to have an expert discuss what that is all about.
I'm fascinated by that.
It's eye-opening.
Yes, especially when you hear about the plastics and the plastic islands in the oceans.
You would think, you've always heard about the ocean.
Right.
But in Lake Michigan,
right,
the microplastics are there, too. How are they getting there? What's happening? There are reasons for it. And I want to talk to everybody about this because it's really, it's something we should kind of, you know, turn our attention to. And I know we are. So Wellness Wednesday is also today. The doctor is in the house. Everything you need to know about the coronavirus. Steve, I know you've been saying in the news that it's reached the U.S. and they're actually screening for it at O'Hare Airport now. It's something that they're trying to contain, obviously. And there were some passengers who were in the affected area in China who have come to O'Hare. So that's why they need to sort of check things here, make sure this doesn't spread any further, particularly in the U.S. Exciting, emotional night at the United Center last night, both for Patrick Kane, for the team, the entire team, the Blackhawks, and Coach Q, the return of Coach Q, first time back in the UC since he coached the Hawks as well. So that's pretty cool. And then this is also fascinating. Remember when you were in high school, ever have a teacher challenge you to do something really good in the world? The assignment in Palos Heights for one class was to do something to change the world. Start with your community. Okay, start with your community. Sounds like a really big task, something, just a big, big thing to be able to wrap your head around. What could I do? What could I do? Well, they figured something out, and it's pretty amazing how this has taken shape because it's turned into a civics lesson, a lesson on how to battle power, how to stand up and have a voice in your community, and ultimately how to impact change and make your community better. We're going to have the teacher who assigned it on the show and was one of the students who was part of this project. Really cool stuff.
I had several teachers that changed my life and the trajectory of my life.
You can go back and you remember them, don't you?
Yeah.
I do too. And it's fascinating. I think this is one of those teachers. I get that sense. So we're going to meet him coming up. I'm so happy he could be on the show because it's yesterday he had some conflicts going on because he's a busy teacher. But today he's going to be here and I'm super excited to meet him. Okay, here is why. Here is why the diets end. The New Year's resolution diets end this time of year.
Okay.
Girl Scout cookies. This is when they start being delivered. This is when you start seeing them. And those Girl Scouts, they guilt you into buying them.
I love Girl Scout cookies. Samosas and Thin Mints kind of gal.
You know, they're the top two. Thin Mints is the number one seller. The Samoas is the number two. And they've got the lemon ones this year that are new. I haven't tried those yet.
I called it a samosa. Sorry. I was combining mimosas.
We know.
Mimosas with Samoas.
Wouldn't that be nice?
That's a perfect drink. If there's not a restaurant doing that cocktail, I need it.
Yeah. So you want to know why everyone falls off the gym wagon before February. Girl Scout cookies go on sale. And a lot of them are being delivered already because they started this mail order thing. My daughter's a Girl Scout.
I was just going to ask.
And online, they do digital sales now.
Oh.
And so you can go online and you get everybody, you send it right to their email inbox. You can have them delivered to your doorstep. Some family members have already gotten them.
Sign of the times.
It is sign of the times, but I almost feel like there's something wrong with that too because it falls on the parents more.
I love that table though. When you walk out of a Costco,
it's hard to say no. You know, it's like, oh, thin mints?
They're here. I've already bought 12 boxes, but I'll buy another.
Why
because you're so cute.
Why wouldn't you get some thin mints or whatever? It's so cute. And then they also have this interesting bulletin from Kenosha, Wisconsin. The police there have a Facebook post. You might want to check it out. It's really cute. A highly addictive substance that they've spotted in Kenosha. And that goes on to say, it continues, thin mints, peanut butter patties, the sandwich cookies, the shortbreads, the s'mores, those are so good, and the Samoas. Operation primarily run by young girls who get you in, get you with a good cause story, and soon you're hooked. Because you are.
Talk about a cookie ring.
Yes.
Do you ever end up buying all the boxes of cookies because your daughter has to sell so many?
We did that this year. Thank you for asking. We did that this year because we lost our paper copy, and you're supposed to have the paper copy around the holidays. So when you see the relatives, you put them in a headlock at the holiday party and you make them, you buy it. This year we didn't have that. So we lost it. We couldn't find it. So we just went on the line with the digital sales. We're buying them, and then we're going to go position ourselves somewhere where we're allowed to sell them.
Gotcha.
That's how, I think the whole thing should be the kid sells them ultimately. You go online, you see a lot of parents getting a lot of traction by, you know, just putting it on social media. And that's a great way to sell it.
But the parents are doing all the work.
The parents do the work. I don't think that's the lesson.
Because it's supposed to be about human interaction and salesmanship and being able to...
You learn something.
Right.
I remember being a Girl Scout walking door to door in the bitter cold January months and then
oh
the
boy.
Delivery months
this
too in
like
February.
Walking up.
Well, I know. I got to tell my daughter this. It'll
for
get
5 miles.
Right. When I tell the story to her, it's going to get even worse. So just watch out. But I remember that was part of it. You're like, oh man, this is not fun. You know, but you know, you learned a little something from that. Now the digital sales, it just changes the whole thing. I still think you should buy Girl Scout cookies.
Does
no matter
this mean
what.
You want me to buy a box of cookies?
This is kind of that sort of roundabout way. Would you mind? It's online. I'll just give you the link
later.
I'll
buy 12.
Okay. That wasn't the total point, but it is a point about it's so hard to resist them. And yes, you break the diet when you see them because they're delicious. Okay, coming up here on WGN, very happy that Nick Gizmati is going to be here. He's with the Blackhawks. He's with NBC Sports as well. He covers the Blackhawks. He's the ringside reporter. He's going to talk about an incredibly emotional night at the United Center last night. That and more coming up on the show. WGN, this is Anna DeBlantis, an emotional, exciting, exhilarating night at the United Center last night. I was not there, but I'm here in studio is with somebody who was there, Nick Gizmondi. You know him. He's the ringside reporter for the Blackhawks. He also works for NBC Sports. Pretty cool night to be there, huh, Nick? I mean, really amazing. You saw the return of Coach Q to the United Center for the first time since coaching the Hawks. You saw Patrick Kane getting feted for his 1,000 professional goal, I mean points, excuse me, 1,000 career points. It was a remarkable night and so much going on. Tell us about what you saw there, what you witnessed.
Oh, you know, it's funny, right? Because I've only been here about five, coming up on 6 months now, and the history is sort of just, it hits you over the head. You and I were talking about it this morning. It's it's one of those things where I feel like there's so much that this organization has done in its history since 1926, but then you just think about the last 10 years. I mean, they were just voted franchise of the decade by NHL.com. Coach Q was voted as coach of the decade, and then just today, Patrick Kane's goal that won him the Stanley Cup in 2010 was voted as goal of the decade. So you think about what this organization has done in just 10 years, and then yesterday, sort of a culmination of all of that with Coach Q returning for the first time, and then also the celebration of Patrick Kane's 1,000th point. It was emotional, and I think the thing that's kind of knocked me over the head is just how much this fan base is truly deeply in love with the franchise, with the players, with anybody involved with it. You saw it, the outpouring for Coach Q, and then after the game on Sunday when Patrick had scored that 1,000th point and I had the chance to talk to him, and you do that interview in front of the 21,000 plus at the United Center, and just the emotions. And I looked around at faces and people are crying. People were crying yesterday during both the ceremonies. And it's, for me, that's powerful. And listen, I've known Patrick Kane a long time. He's an emotional guy, too. So to see that on his face and to see how much it meant to him, that he meant so much to the city of Chicago and the Blackhawks was heavy, like very heavy.
Love seeing his dad at morning skate with the homemade sign, the 1000 for the 1,000 points. It's, I mean, on a remarkable accomplishment. I mean, the thing with Patrick Kane is I think we all knew it wasn't if, it was when. And he was moving toward that target. You knew it would come, but he's still in this place where he's magical.
Yeah, and he's getting better. Like, that's the scary thing about, I don't know. Patrick and I had this conversation yesterday before morning.
Oh, little name drop there.
After, yeah, you know.
Just
you know,
me and Patrick Kane.
Just me and Patrick Kane talking.
No big deal.
I mean, I was with, 20 of our closest media friends in the locker room. So it wasn't like it was just, you know, him and I over coffee. But, you know, I watched him play when he was 14. He was playing for a team called Honey Baked in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
A junior team, and
he had to be in his teens because he was 19 when he came here.
He was 14. I mean, it was a major commitment. These guys, he moved away from his home and his family in Buffalo to pursue his dream. And you heard all the chatter even then. He's too small. He's never going to make it in the NHL. And you watched him play as a 14, 15 year old, and you're like, yeah, he's going to be just fine. and he's proven it. And now, you know, I think the reason he's getting better is because he is such a perfectionist. And I call him a hockey nerd sometimes, and I mean that in like the nicest, most meaningful possible way. He is a student of the game like I've never seen before. He loves it. He cares about it. He watches it. He studies it. He wants to be as good as he can at every aspect of it. And when you watch him at practice and you watch him do things, he's just constantly improving. So 1,000 points in less than 1,000 games, not a surprise.
Was he emotional himself when you guys talked to him in the locker room after? I know his family was. I know other players were. It was an emotional night. But what about him?
Yeah, you can see it in his eyes. He's gotten good at keeping it just below the surface. But I think the last couple of days, it kind of wells up. I think yesterday was the most emotional that he's been. I think he came into the locker room after he got that 1,000th point. And I think what moved him the most was the fact that the boys all rushed down to the ice.
Yeah.
And that's something that cool his moment. Longtime friend and captain, Jonathan Toews, had set up. And Jonathan was ready for it the game before as well when they were on the road. But, you know, he went over to the referees before the game and he said, hey, listen, if he gets this, we'd all like to really come out onto the ice. So just the foresight of Jonathan Toews to think about that for his friend and what he knew it would mean to him. And I think when Patrick Kane looks back on it, that will be probably the most meaningful. That and the way the crowd reacted, and that he was able to do it at home at the United States.
Speaking of the crowd reaction, the standing O for Coach Q, the chanting of everyone in the 21,000 fans, Q, Q, Q. I mean, that, I just saw the video of it. You were there. Yeah. Just another just spectacular moment. And the connection, let's face it, that the core of this team still has with that coach. And the 3 Stanley Cups he was able to bring to this town, no one can ever forget that. It was just some amazing times for Chicagoans that this team and that coach brought to Chicago.
Yeah, fabric, right? I mean, when you think about what this logo and what this iconic franchise is stitched with, certainly Q has a couple of major threads in that, right? And you know, the response that he got yesterday was an ode to what he had done over the course of the decade that he was here. And again, for him to have that kind of longevity and for him to have that kind of impact and power and inspiration over that core group of guys that you talked about, the Jonathan Toews, the Corey Crawfords, the Duncan Keiths, the Seabrooks, you know, it goes on. And then, you know, listen, even the influence and the effect that he's had on Jeremy Colleton. I mean, mm-hmm. Jeremy Colleton came to this organization because of Coach Q, because mm-hmm. that was a guy he wanted to learn under and be around and be a part of. So Yeah, I think the man that Coach Q is certainly got the respect it deserved yesterday.
I love the tribute video that they had of him and just looking at the cutaways of Coach Q's face. I always found it hard to tell what Coach Q was like, his emotions, because you had to look at his eyes, that mustache covered, whether he was frowning or smiling. Yeah. Last night, you could see the smile ear to ear. He was loving looking back at all those memories. We have a little bit of audio of Coach Q afterwards, because he obviously was the center of attention later, too, and everyone flocked to ask Coach Q, what do you think? What do you think about all of this?
It was good. It was a good feeling seeing not all you people here today, but walking in and seeing Frankie and John and some of the trainers, and eventually see some of the players, and then the fans. So it's it all brings back special time in our lives.
Yeah, it brings back special times for all of us, but you could see really, touching moment. And the way the players greeted him, too, just tackled him in the hallway there.
It was cool.
As he was heading in.
Yeah, you know what else was fun? And this is, I told this story last night on NBC Sports Chicago, and it was pretty powerful for me, too. I don't know. It was a subtle nod, but classic Coach Q wore an orange tie yesterday.
Okay.
That is a nod to somebody that had a profound effect on him, Ross McNeil, a young man who passed away from cancer at a very young age when Coach Q was here. And Coach Q had taken a shining to him, and they had brought him in, and the Ross McNeil Foundation's a big thing, and, they've done a lot of stuff with it in the organization, but he was 11 years old when he passed away. He's a little hockey player, was in the fifth grade, but it was powerful for me because the orange had significance, and that was a nod to young Ross and the McNeil family, and it was Ross's favorite quote was surrounded by his favorite color, which was orange, and that was, you can't be unhappy and wear orange. So I thought it was fitting that Coach Q kind of gave a nod to people that he was close with, and his wife was here last night, so it's special.
It is special. I mean, and you think about what a cool night for fans, too, to get to see this all culminate in one night. How is that possible?
It was a heavy night for the fan base, I'm sure. I hope you guys are okay out there. Like, take a minute today. Like, get some, take a deep breath and move forward. Mm-hmm. I think it's fun, too, because it's an exciting time for the Blackhawks. I mean, this team has turned around, and they're on a roll right now. They look good. They've got this little break right now, this 10-day break with All-Star and bye week, but they're going to come back on a tear in February, and I think we're going to be real happy with where they're at in the next 3 or 4 weeks.
I hope you're right, because missing the playoffs, it felt like this team was better than that, right? It just felfelt... Yeah. It felt like they should have been there. And this year, we want to see more out of them. And I just love that team, and I love everyone involved with that organization. So it's cool. How are you enjoying it? So this, you're ringside reporter. We get to see you on that ginormous new Jumbotron.
Yeah.
I don't even, what is it? Is it a Jumbotron, or what do you call it?
It's like a Megatron.
Megatron. Yeah, I think that's better.
Copyrighted by the Transformers people, but they'll send me a letter.
It's huge.
But, no, it's cool. It's funny. I've talked about this a lot as well, too. I'm having the time of my life. I've been doing this for 24 years, and to be a part of this franchise is a dream come true. I mean, the way that Rocky does things, and the way that John McDonough and Jay Blunk and Stan and Al McIsaac, and then on top of that, the folks that I get to work with on a regular basis, the communications team. I mean, Adam Roggewin and John Steinmeier, and then there's Mike Curran and Will Chuckerman and Lindsay. I keep telling everybody, I keep thanking everybody for letting me have this opportunity to be here, because it's truthfully white glove.
It's like pinch me, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's a legendary franchise and an incredible city, and to be a part of it and to get to hang out, get to talk with you guys. And
well,
I mean, I'm having the time of my life right now. I don't tell anybody. I'd probably pay them to have me here.
You did not say
did
that.
Say
as
that?
Your agent, I would say that was not Nick Gismondi.
Yeah.
That was his body double saying that. He should be paid double what he's paid currently for the great work, he's doing over at the Blackhawks.
You're my new agent now, too.
So. Absolutely. So have the players given you, do they prank you a little bit? Don't they prank kind of each other? Do they also do that with the reporters? I know you develop a rapport with them.
Yeah.
You spend so much time with them before, after, during the game. It's that kind of relationship's got to be cool.
They haven't started pranking me yet, but I imagine that's coming. But it has been very cool to have a relationship with them, and they're great, great guys. Like, yeah. They're very, very fun to cover, and they're very genuine. And there's not a guy in that room that I wouldn't want to hang out with, and there's not a guy in that room that I wouldn't go to battle for, because you can tell they're all part of the family, and they've brought me into that, too. There's a lot of fun to be had, and a lot of ribbing back and forth, that's for sure. So I've known Ryan Carpenter for a couple years, because I was in Vegas for 2 years, Ryan was there. So Ryan and I had a relationship prior, which is fun to get to see him again on a regular basis. So.
Well, it's fun to see you on this basis, and hopefully you'll be on a regular basis. Nick Gismondi with the Blackhawks. He's the ringside reporter. He's also with NBC Sports. And thank you for sharing last night, because I saw it. I saw little bits of it on TV, and then I saw some of it after the interviews and the tribute videos. Yeah. It's something, if you're a Hawks fan, go look at it. It'll bring tears to your eyes. It'll make you happy, and you're making us feel like we were there. So that's so super cool.
Well, thank you, and thanks for having me. And hey, props, by the way, to the production teams at the Chicago Blackhawks for putting those videos together.
It?
I mean,
they had
to do that very quickly, and it's pretty special.
Remarkable, everything they do over there. Thank you, Nick. Good to see you.
Thank you. Always
more
great.
More to come here on WGN Radio, including we're talking about shoreline erosion. We're talking about high lake levels in Lake Michigan and the plastic problem. We're going to talk more with our Illinois expert here with the Environmental Council for Illinois. She's got a lot to tell us about coming up. Anna DeVlantis here in the WGN studio, along with a special guest and a number of subjects to cover with her. Lake Michigan water levels, you've heard about them. They're rising nearly 6 feet in the past 6 years to near record levels. You've heard about the eroding shoreline along Lake Michigan. We've heard this, the beaches on the north side, far north side going away. On the south side, beaches are eroding. And it's a real problem. And then the other issue is, there are many issues, but another one that's of particular concern right now is the growing amounts of microplastics they're pulling out of the lake. 22 million pounds a year was an astonishing headline I saw of microplastics they pull out of Lake Michigan, or they found. That's the estimate from scientists who are studying this kind of thing. Where's it coming from? What can we do about it? That and all these problems. Jen Walling is the executive director of the Illinois Environmental Council. Thank you, Jen, for being in and talking with us.
Thanks for having me.
You know, I want to ask you, can we start with the lake levels? Because that is something that we are all concerned about. We can all see. It's amazing that they're rising at such a pace that we can actually see it. Mm-hmm. You know, because water rising over the course of a year or two, if it were just incremental levels, it would be difficult to measure. But when we look at beach erosion, we look at what's happening on the shoreline, it's pretty clear.
Absolutely. I think I live on the far north side, and I've seen over the last 5 years, there's a dog beach that's completely gone that I used to go to 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And just this year, the shocking pictures that we've seen of the lake levels rising all over south side, north side, and the way that it is impacting the infrastructure that's there. I think that when folks talk about climate change, one of the things that's missing is how expensive dealing with the infrastructure costs are going to be. And this is just a small example. It's going to be far cheaper for us to do things like invest in renewable energy than have to build all new infrastructure. It's not only happening here, but also Florida Everglades, all sorts of flooding where ocean levels, lake levels are rising.
And when you say rising, each inch that it rises in Lake Michigan is equivalent to 790 billion gallons of water. Mm-hmm. Rainwater?
Rainwater, just water from the water cycle, runoff. I mean, you know, the slope of the lake, et cetera.
Yeah, so it's all contributing to this issue. And it isn't just, we're focused on Chicago. You go to Michigan and Indiana, or the shores of Michiana. Those are areas where you see piers underwater. You see major beach erosion. You see areas where the houses are now having to fill in with rocks in front of their homes just to keep pace with the rising water levels so it doesn't swallow up their houses.
Yeah, this is private and public property damage that's happening, that's real, that we need to work on. And we've been working on the Clean Energy Jobs Act, something related to renewable energy in Illinois and addressing climate change. We need to do something, and we need to do something quickly, or these infrastructure costs that we're going to see, the costs of losing some of our most precious assets are going to be too high, and we need to take action right away.
Okay, so the kind of action that would happen, what would, in perfect world, what would you like to see? What would be helpful?
Well, there's short-term actions that need to be taken to prevent more erosion. There's a lot of areas where you see, kind of unfortunately, but fortunately, because we need to protect the erosion, rocks going in instead of beaches to prevent it. There's a lot that can be done with natural landscaping and dunes that maybe suck up some more of the water. But those are going to be things that are going to be short term. And long term, I mean, we need to take action on climate change. This is, these lake levels are related to what's happening with the climate, and we need to do something about it quickly.
So you are also, you take, I mean, your advocacy to Washington, is that part of what you do here as part of the Illinois Environmental Council?
Sure. We represent over 80 environmental organizations throughout the state, and we do City of Chicago, State of Illinois, and a little bit of federal lobbying, working on all sorts of environmental issues for environmental groups in Illinois.
Is it the kind of thing that you've been on for a while? It's just now most of us can actually see it and feel it when we see beaches disappearing and we see the lake levels get this high, that it becomes a lot of people knocking on your door or letting you know on social media, hey, do something, get something done.
For sure. We're definitely getting calls from folks about it. Luckily, I think a lot of people in Chicago have been tuned into this issue. There's folks that are saying that climate change is going to impact the Chicago and the Great Lakes area even more than Florida, which we traditionally think of in terms of flooding and that sort of thing. It's intense. It's something we've been working on forever. I think we've made progress, but we need more, and we're going to need to do more to address this issue.
I heard it was an alderman say something about landfill. Is that one of the solutions, to start putting landfill into Lake Michigan? We've done that before over the time. If you look at Chicago history, is that something that is a solution, at least a temporary solution for right now?
Yeah, it's definitely something we're going to have to talk about when you're talking about the last 4 miles, either on the south or the north side. Landfill is how you build out those beaches. But I think we're, even if we did something like the last 4 miles on either end of the lakefront, I think we're going to have to think about new ways to stop erosion. We all love the beautiful beaches in Chicago. But if this continues to happen, we're going to need to do things that are more cost effective in terms of preventing erosion. And some of that, you know, I just was at a beach where they put up a bunch of big rocks to stop some of the sand erosion.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's not ideal. That's not what we love. But if we're going to protect these special places, that's important. But I can't discount, you know, there's a lot of areas with really neat dunes and restoration areas. Some of those are flooding. But that sort of thing also we need to think about. We definitely need new strategies in how we protect our lakefront. I also think it's, there's a lot of people on the lakefront, both north and south side, that have not wanted the last 4 miles project, that are definitely begging for it now, because they're seeing the way that the foundations of their building, which is on the lake, is being hurt by not having this. So it's going to be expensive. It's going to be a discussion that we have to have, but this is a really important asset, really important outdoor recreation area for the city. Lake Michigan is so important, and we need to do what we can to protect it. But like I said, I think the biggest long-term solution is passing things like the Clean Energy Jobs Act so that we can address climate change in Illinois.
Yeah, it's a treasure, and it's a huge resource, to speak of the water supply that it is for us. We had Alderman Hopkins in a couple weeks ago when those waves were kicking up and really splashing onto Lakeshore Drive, and they've got those barriers in place. And he just said those barriers are a Band-Aid. We've got a lot of temporary solutions in place and a few more proposed. Long-term solutions harder to get to, and it always is. Yeah. They always are. We mentioned before also that you think of our oceans and you think of other places, bodies of water around the world. I think we've all heard about, I think, the big plastic reefs or garbage dumps, whatever you want to call them, that have been created out in the oceans. Mm-hmm. They've started new ecosystems off of them. You find them in the bellies of wildlife, and they're eating them, and they're, sadly, a lot of times doesn't always work out well for them, but that's happening there. But then there is that study that found 22 million pounds of plastic entering the Great Lakes every year, and most of it pouring into Lake Michigan. A startling headline I saw in the Tribune, I think in the fall or late summer, and I started to wonder about, okay, where's all that coming from? 22 million pounds of plastic. Surely we're not all throwing every bottle of water we have into the lake. What's happening there? Jen?
Well, I mean, we're using more and more plastics, and the plastics that that were created decades ago still exist in the environment and are breaking down. I think that there's more information that's being found about where it's coming from. A lot of it does come from industrial sources, so we can't just blame individuals, but there's a number of plastics that we're using in our daily lives. There's even plastics from the clothing that we're wearing that breaks down and is going into wastewater, into the lake, and litter, and that sort of thing. We work a lot with Alliance for the Great Lakes and Friends of the Chicago River, both organizations that do litter pickups, and they have data on the beaches and in the Chicago River of all of this plastic that they're finding, and nobody wants that. It's all really disturbing and something we need to take action on.
I saw something related to that, that washing our clothes is even part of the problem, that in our washing machines, if you have plastics, acrylics in your clothing, anything that's sort of poly-based or, you know, based on a plastic sort of substance, that it washes off into the water supply. And these are these microplastics that are so difficult to deal with once they get into your water supply, that they're there and they end up in the drinking water. They end up in fish and are the things that we eat, and you know, that ends up in the entire ecosystem, and it's not a good thing.
Yeah, those microplastics, we don't quite know the health impacts of microplastics yet, but there are different studies that look at the way that it affects your respiratory system, digestive system, etc. We know that those microplastics can pick up toxins from the environment that end up in people's bodies that wouldn't otherwise. We know there are microplastics in almost everybody's body at this point, and it's something that is a huge health concern. We definitely should be worried about it and should be figuring out how we can reduce the amount of plastic that is entering there, that that we can reduce what we're using.
So you would recommend you don't like the plastic bags and the metal straws, the plastic reusable, get the reusable bottles and that kind of thing. Just sort of even think about what we all can do, I suppose, is something, something to think about.
Yeah, I think when it comes to this, individual action is important. People should take steps that they can to reduce the amount of plastic that they're using. But in the organization that we run, because we're an environmental advocacy organization, it's going to make a lot bigger difference if the city does it as a whole, which is why we've worked with Alderman Scott Wagasback to introduce the plastic-free water ordinance.
Got it. Yeah, well, there's a much more ahead in your area, so I hope you'll come back and talk to us about it. Jen Walling is the executive director of the Illinois Environmental Council. Thank you. Thank you so much for stopping by the studio. It's good to meet you.
Thank you.
Coming up here, though, we want to talk about an incredible teacher and some students in Palos Heights. Their assignment, do something to change the world, start with your community, and what they ended up doing, something pretty remarkable. I can't imagine that they expected what happened, what would happen next. It's a civics lesson. It's a lesson on a battle against powerful forces, politics, and all sorts of stuff, and it landed them on the front page of the paper. And the teacher who assigned that, the students, that lesson, and one of the students is going to be here on the show. Stay with us. We've been talking about this on the show. Remember when you were in high school, way back when? Ever have a teacher truly challenge you to do something maybe you weren't even sure you could do? That's happening in Palos Heights right now. The assignment was do something to change the world and start with your community. And a group of students there did. What happened next? Let's talk about that with the teacher who assigned the project. Jeff Vazana is that teacher at Shepherd High School in Palos Heights. Jeff, thanks for being on WGN.
No problem.
And also we want to welcome Meadow Homa. She's one of the students who was part of this project. So you guys are getting all kinds of coverage here, but bring us back to the beginning of how this all started. What was the assignment, Jeff? What did you tell the students to do?
Well, for me, what I try to do in December is show the kids that what they've been learning all semester, whether that's the love of language, learning the love of language, using their art of persuasion, they have those skills and now they can go and prove them somehow. And I want them to make a change, you know, find that the ability within themselves to make a change in the school or in the community. And the kids every year rise to the occasion, and this year was no different. So they are just incredible kids.
So how long have you been assigning? Has this been an assignment as part of the curriculum in your classroom?
About 5 or 6 years now.
Okay. What a great challenge. And then, so did the whole class come together and submit one idea? Did individuals or groups get together and submit ideas? How did that work?
So So there's about five or six groups in every class, and some of the groups, they try to make a change locally, so within the classroom or within the school. But some of the groups actually get outside of the classroom and try to influence the community or even influence the state in some way.
Mm-hmm. Let's get Meadow, the student who was part of this project, involved. Meadow, what grade are you in?
I'm a junior.
Junior. Okay, junior at Shepherd. And you get this assignment, and so you're in this group. And what did you come up with?
We came up with the idea of having something done with the Dominics at 127th and Richland.
So Dominic's, as we all know, has not been in business for a long time, and some of these stores are just sitting vacant. And what was the problem that you saw there when you looked at it, and why this became the focus of your project?
I saw it as just empty space. It was an eyesore to the community, and there were so many things that could be done to it to benefit the community instead of just being there wasting space.
Okay, so what was, when you kind of said, hey, I'm looking at this and this needs to be changed, what was it you felt in your gut about why that was such a problem?
It's just, when we did the research about the building and who's in ownership of it, it really just isn't right what's being done with it. There's nothing, there's no businesses in it, there's nothing being done with it, and they're still just gaining money instead of doing something with it to benefit the community.
So you learned that it was being purposefully kept, not in business, that it's just sort of a dead store, for lack of a better way to put it, and a big chunk of a piece of land there in the middle of what I suppose what once was a vibrant community area. Is that, I'm not familiar with this particular piece of land. How, what was it like in the past versus now?
In the past, it was filled by the Dominics, and it was a very popular place for the community to go to and stuff. Mm-hmm. But now that it's empty, there isn't as much business in the area, and not as much population around it, I guess.
Right. So there are things going on, as we all see outside our grocery stores. You got Girl Scouts selling cookies. You've got things going on. You've got people coming and going and activity, you've got communities seeing each other, people, and interacting. And it's not like that anymore. So your idea was, hey, let's change that, right? What did you want to do?
We just wanted to try to influence something to be done with the building. Me and my group did come up with ideas if we were asked of stuff that we thought would be a good business to benefit the community.
What did you come up with? What was that business?
We decided that it would be good ideas to use a space as like a recreational facility, such as a roller rink, a bowling alley, et cetera, or even a venue for special events.
Mm-hmm. And when you proposed that, what happened?
We didn't get the chance to, because as we were trying to find the direct owner that would be able to actually begin the process of something being done with the building, every person that we got in contact with led us to somebody else. So we are still in the process of finding the person that is in charge of the entire thing.
So would you say it's a bit of the runaround? Are you thinking that you're getting a little frustrated with how difficult it is? Is it just that difficult? Is it hard to find the person? How would you characterize
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So what do you do now? I mean, as you say, okay, you're not giving up. You're still going to try to change this in your community. You're moving forward, aren't you, Meadow? What's next?
We're still getting in contact with the direct owner. And once we do, we're just going to do our best to see if something will happen with it.
Have you been in touch with elected officials and people close in your community? Those people, I imagine, are accessible. What's happening there?
So two of the members of my group went to a city council meeting for Palos Heights, and the mayor actually told them that he has tried and failed in the past to have something done with the building because of the fact that money is being brought in from the building without even anything inside of it.
Oh, it's got to be so frustrating. Jeff, so what do you tell your students in a situation like this? They're working towards something. It turns out to be harder than they thought. And what are you saying to them now? How do you move forward?
Well, I ask them to really think about what they want to accomplish. And I think that this group has been incredibly successful because they've been able to put in perspective what they want and the barriers that are in the way.
Yeah.
So I tell them, you know, you're 17 years old, and you've talked to the mayor of Palos Heights. You've talked to the city council members. You've talked to aldermen, and you have power at 17. Imagine what you can do, you know, once you're out of high school, once you're in the real world. So in terms of what they're getting out of my class, my objectives are met. I'm sorry you're hearing the bells from the school.
class
it's the school
changes.
Day.
Is the
exactly.
period over and it's time? Is it school over?
Right,
or is it
right.
Just...
The period's over and the next period's beginning. But I'm so proud of these kids, and they are hitting barriers, and they're getting frustrated, and they're saying, why does this have to be vacant? Why would, you know, they purposely keep it vacant? And they're asking the right questions to the right people. So they have the power to make a change. And I think people are upset about the fact that it's a vacant store, not because there's not businesses, not because there's businesses that are unwilling to go there, but because it's purposely being done.
Well, you sound like an amazing teacher, Jeff. I mean, it's just, you're right. So many life lessons learned in that process of this class assignment, and I bet that happens all the time. But it's pretty cool to see what you're doing there. And keep up the good work, Meadow, and let us know what's happening. Keep us posted. And thank you both for your time. Jeff Vizzana is the teacher at Shepherd High School there in Palos Heights, and Meadow Homa is one of the students who is impacting change in her community. Thanks, guys. Thanks for being on WGN. Appreciate it.
Great.
Okay, I think we want to do a giveaway at this time. So I'm going to ask for caller number 8, 312-981-7200. You get 9 meals from Seattle Sutton's Healthy Eating, including 3 breakfasts, 3 lunch, 3 dinners. How about that? Delivered right to your door. They'll deliver it on Friday. So you have it for the weekend. How nice is that? Honest food, clean, healthy ingredients. Visit SeattleSutton.com. Caller number 8. You get that prize package. So how about that? Great way to start your weekend when that comes in the mail. More to come, including the news at the top of the hour from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN. You're listening to WGN. This is Anna DeVlantis. It's Wellness Wednesday, and the doctor is in the house. Trauma surgeon Dr. Steven Saltzman, that is. He's here with us. He is the founder of Green Care Medical, in addition to being a trauma surgeon. And if you don't know what Green Care Medical is, you will want to know, and we'll get to that later on. But we have got to first get to this coronavirus. This just crossing, Dr. Steve. Breaking news, China said it will shut down all transportation. No one allowed to leave the Wuhan province where this all began. The whole coronavirus started there, and it seemed to be spreading from there as people got on, what, airplanes and everything? Brought
yep.
it everywhere?
Yep. That's how it spread. It's very similar to the whole epidemic back in 2003 with SARS. But I guess let's start from the beginning and talk yeah. about what is coronavirus and sort of what's going on. Basically, the city of Wuhan is where they believe this has emanated from. They believe they've linked it to a large seafood and animal market in the city. Mm. And coronaviruses are a large group of viruses that can cause illnesses as minor as a cold or as serious as SARS or MERS. SARS is what was back in 2003 that happened.
I remember.
MERS is the Middle East version of it. It's the acute respiratory syndrome. And it's usually, interestingly enough, transmitted from animals to humans. But they appear to think that some of these cases are now transmitted human to human, which is odd because that means some kind of mutation must have taken place to allow that virus to transmit that way.
Wait, explain that again. I don't quite understand. What does that mean?
So basically, the transmissions usually from animals to virus when SARS broke out, for instance, in 2003.
You eat chicken that's affected.
It's usually respiratory that it's done with or transmitted by. But basically, what happens is that the animal that was tracked to back in 2003 was a civet, which is like a cat-like animal. And that's how they found the first case transmitted from animals to human. But in this case, they're saying, the Chinese are saying that it is human to human. So that means that some kind of mutation must have taken place to allow the transmission to go from human to human and not from animal to human.
Now, when you say human to human, does that mean if I sit next to you on an airplane? that I could get
correctly.
It?
I have cough or respiratory droplets is how it's. So if you sneezed or have coughed or accidentally something came out of your oral mucosa.
Oh, that sounds lovely. I love it when people do that on airplanes.
People are just totally gross
the
on airplanes.
At you and you kind of feel the particles land. You sort of just like droplets. You're like, ooh, yeah. This might not be good on the other end.
And you don't realize, Anna, you don't realize that. So the healthcare workers that were taking care of one patient, apparently that one patient knocked out 11, 12 or whatever, 17 healthcare workers. So one sick patient and people don't have the appropriate coverage and protection. They're at risk and they can get it just that quick. That's why, they talk about with biological terrorism, how frightening it is where, just infect one person, they don't even know. And by the time you realize they're sick, they could have come in contact with a whole bunch of other people.
Because does it present like a flu? Does it look... feel like that when you initially examine someone in an emergency room who shows up with this?
Yeah, I think that there's a number of symptoms that you look for, a fever, or they look sick, or chills, or just sort of malaise. Again, there's a lot of problems with this because they don't know what the incubation period actually is. They don't actually 100% know the route of transmission, although they think it's also human to human, like we just spoke about, on top of animal to human. Also, they don't know how contagious it is or the severity of the illness or the potential mortality rate. So they're just identifying this now, and they're going to have to sort of come up with a lot of those answers. And they're the best thing to do now, like the Chinese stopped everybody from leaving that province, is containment. You don't want it to get out, because now what's happened is there are people who've traveled from Wuhan into these other areas, and now they're seeing cases in Thailand, in Taiwan, in Japan, in South Korea, and now in Washington State here in the United States, the first case in Seattle.
So far we know of one case.
Unless something
in the U.S.
recently.
Well, you're right. It is moving. I saw this morning's news was already outdated by this afternoon. It was nine dead worldwide, or seven dead, and then it went to nine, then 17 as of like a couple hours ago. Right. Again, I haven't checked in the last 2 hours, but deemed a global health emergency. Still, that number of death, it's not, I mean, you think about the flu in the U.S., 6,600 people have died of the flu in the U.S. alone. This is nowhere near those levels, but it seems, again, highly contagious, and they want to contain it.
Yes. If you don't contain it, this is exactly how pandemics break out, and how one situation can turn into a major catastrophe in multiple areas of the world.
So when they say that this was the news that we've been following today throughout the day from our news department, that the O'Hare is one of the airports now that is screening passengers for this mysterious virus. I imagine there are people who are coming from that province, the Wuhan province, where this all started. And what do they check for? As everybody comes off that plane, go to a doctor? I mean,
what happens here? It's very interesting. First of all, what they did was the CDC deployed workers to the major airports, and they're limiting flights. So Wuhan flights or anyone coming from that area are only coming to certain airports like Atlanta, O'Hare, Los Angeles, I think one or two other airports also. And what they do is they'll screen patients coming off of the flights to see if they look sick or they have any symptoms that might be concerning. If they do, then they're quarantined and then taken for medical care. If not, then the CDC and the healthcare workers give out literature to really make people aware of both what's going on and, God forbid, what to look for if they start to feel sick. The CDC, by the way, has developed a test to diagnose the virus. It's just they can only do it in the CDC, so they're working on ways now to share the test with other organizations across the globe.
When you look at the people who've become affected by this, who contracted it, the deaths they're not necessarily old or very young or necessarily weak. A 30-year-old is one of among the death and the deaths counted. Why is this? I guess it impacts people no matter what your medical background.
Right. Again, they don't actually know how virulent this strain is. So it's sort of hard to tell. But even the flu, we just think we feel crummy and a bunch of days and then sort of get over it. But, if patients have pre-existing health conditions and medical issues or even medical problems that they aren't even aware of, and then they get hit with something that virulent and that toxic, even somewhat healthy people can be completely taken out by it.
Final question on this, and then we've got to move on to some other health topics that are interesting. There's some diets to talk about. There's the body temperature issue to talk about. But can you wear those masks? You see them in the airports all the time. And you see them in Asia in particular. When I've traveled to Asia, very popular, very common to see the mask. Is that going to protect you against this?
So can I tell a quick story?
Yeah.
So in 2003, I was in Asia. And I was touring with a rock band. And as their personal physician.
You were touring with the rock band. What was the rock band?
The Rolling Stones.
The Rolling Stones. Thank you. You weren't going to humble brag, so I did it for you. I helped you there.
Yeah.
Why were you... a separate story. Okay,
separate
go ahead.
Story, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, so much to talk about. Anyway, when we got there, we started talking about masks because we were in Singapore and we had to go into China where there was show scheduled in Shanghai and Beijing. And with SARS, there are only very specific masks that protect. So if you just get one of those masks that you could buy in Walgreens that aren't very specific... they won't protect against it. So I forget the exact mask. It's not coming to me, but I had to buy 200 of them for all the people.
Okay.
And we wound up not going anyway. We just skipped it and went to India. But
but you were touring with the Rolling Stones, and that's a story for another time, I suppose. We're going to be back with Dr. Steve Saltzman. It's Wellness Wednesday. If you have questions for the doctor, he'll take those, 312-981-7200. But we want to discuss this because the normal body temperature... listen to this headline, is not 98.6 anymore, and it's getting lower. Okay, so it's lower than that, and it's getting lower. What's that all about? Dr. Steve Saltzman is with us in just a few minutes. We're here in WGN. This is Anna DeVlantis, along with Dr. Steven Saltzman. We just finished talking about the coronavirus, and I felt like I was in that Gwyneth Paltrow movie. What's that movie again? Contagion, right?
Yeah,
oh,
exactly.
My gosh. It's just like, stop it, please. And I learned that the masks don't all work either. You got to have the special mask, the good mask. So we know that. Now try to understand this. Your normal body temperature for a normal human is not 98.6 anymore. It's getting lower as well. Can you describe that for us, Dr. Steven? Can you tell us what's going on there?
Yeah, so let's start back from the beginning. Back in 1851, there was a German physician, Karl Wunderlich, no relation to Nate Wunderlich, who's my choir teacher, but I digress.
What school? Oh, okay. All right.
No, New York. No. Anyway, there was a German physician, Karl Wunderlich, and he did this study and established that the average body temperature was 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit. However, in Stanford University, there was a researcher, Dr. Julie Parsnett, and her people compared three groups of data. One group was the Civil War vets in the mid-1800s, from 1800 to 1930 or so, data from the 1970s, and then a third group where they took data from 2007 to 2017, and this was done from the Stanford Health Clinics. And basically, what they found was that men born in the 2000s had a temperature that was 1.06 degrees Fahrenheit lower than men that were born in the early 1800s.
Weird.
And women had a 0.58 degree Fahrenheit than women who were born in the 1890s. And the question, obviously, is why? And I think there's probably multiple reasons. I know two of them would be, one of them, probably patients growing taller and heavier. And so
that could lower your body temperature?
The metabolic rates are slowed. And so that would cause the lowering of the temperature. The other thing is, back in those times, syphilis and TB and periodontal disease was very prominent, and they didn't have good treatments for any of these things. Some of them they had no treatments for. So the elimination of some of these diseases and really sort of helped people to be able to fight these. So basically, what is fever? Let's just talk about that real quickly.
That's important.
It's your body's normal response to try to increase your body temperature so that the environment is difficult for organisms to grow, and that's why fever. It's a normal response, and I think the more important thing for the study is not that temperature is a little bit lower, but more importantly, clinically speaking, it's the extremes of temperature, whether you're hypothermic or hyperthermic. I think these are what's important. Just like, you know, 98.6 or 99 is not going to matter per se versus if you come off the plane from Wuhan and you're 101, 102.
Yeah, you're going to worry about that person.
Yeah, right? I mean, it's an interesting study, but what it ultimately means... not much, probably.
No. Okay. So it just seemed like a strange headline because all of us have learned that that's where it sits.
Yeah.
but that it's probably important for people who work in the health community to know that it's lower.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. It's, you know, again, when you're taking a temperature, I think clinically speaking, if somebody's, you know, 97.9, 98.2, 99, these are all in the range and not something to be alarmed at.
All right, let's talk about sugar, something a lot of people are trying to cut down on. I know I am, but this is sugar and children. There's a study here that also talks about how children are consuming 11,000 excess grams of sugar per year. By 10 years old, children have already exceeded the maximum recommended amount of sugar for an 18-year-old.
Right.
And I don't know if that has that changed over the years. It feels like kids are always eating more sugar.
I think sugar is a major problem. It's very interesting. In our practice, once you start getting people sleeping and feeling better, and we start deep diving through their lives, when we get to the part about diet, there are really, you can't make these major changes, but what we try to do is we try to limit sugar, mm-hmm. and we try to limit caffeine. It's very difficult. You wouldn't imagine it would be so difficult, but it's literally like withdrawal from any other drug. When you cut out sugar, people feel crummy and they just don't feel right, and it takes some time to rebound from that, because, you know, I guess we call ourselves sugar toxic to some degree.
Yeah.
And it starts, this was out of England, but ages 2 through 10 consume 32 more grams of added sugar than is recommended. So basically it added up to that 11,200 grams of sugar a year. So it's a huge amount. The important things that we talk to patients about and for their family is you want to try to swap out foods with low sugar alternatives and be very aware of what you're feeding yourself and your family. Sugar is well known to lead to obesity, to tooth decay, to diabetes. So it's a major health problem, and it's something that we start to work with patients on pretty intensely once we get into the diet part to try to get them off the sugar.
I know you're doing, you mentioned your practice. I know at Green Care Medical you're doing a number, you're taking a different look at people's health conditions and approaching it from a different angle, I would say. Is that fair to say? Talk about that, what it is you're doing.
Yeah, initially, obviously, it's an integrative cannabis medicine practice. So we're initially using cannabis to treat the anxiety, to treat pain, and to help with sleep. But once patients are sleeping and feeling better, that's when you sort of have a command audience. And that's when we start implementing very specific things. First things we usually do is something called low intensity steady state cardio, which is very similar to the intermittent fasting thing, where you have patients on an empty stomach first thing in the morning to hydrate, medicate, and take their heart rate 80 to 110 for 45 minutes to an hour. And the reason is because that fasted cardio doesn't burn into your glycogen stores and preferentially burns fat. So when people say, well, what can I do to lose weight and burn fat? The low intensity steady state cardio on an empty stomach first thing in the morning is scientifically proven to burn fat. It's the single best thing.
There's a lot there in that what you just said. So the intermittent fasting, I want to get to in a second if we have time.
Yeah,
but
sure.
Then you also take this holistic approach, though, because you're finding that when people come in with one condition, you actually learn that there's an underlying condition that's not necessarily being treated. Anxiety, people come in with stress factors that kind of need to be addressed before you can get to the core root of the problem.
Yeah, 100%. And anxiety is a perfect example of all of that, because with anxiety, if you really get into it, most of these patients who are seen by their doctors, maybe they talk to them for 5 or 10 minutes and they really never get down to the whole nitty gritty. I think this is a multi-pronged approach. It's not just, you know, band-aid. A little pain, take a pill. A little anxious, take a pill. Take a crap, take a pill. Everyone's taking pills, take a pill, right? So it's band-aid. What you really have to do, Anne, is you have to build a sustainable model of health with a sustainable diet. And the problem, I think, with a lot of things is that patients are set up for failure, you know, right out of the gate. And so going back for anxiety, you have to not only treat the anxiety, but you have to go after what's the root causes. And then eventually, you know, when you apply not bro science, but when we actually use true science, you know, with lifestyle change and really talking to people and getting to the root of the problem, that's how you start to really make an impact.
Well, I have some bro science for you to finish off the segment here. It's called the mirror, and it's the most expensive mirror you've ever bought. I myself will not be buying it, but it's interesting to see how many celebrities are posting this on their social media feeds. It's Jennifer Aniston, Courtney Cox, Kate Hudson, Gwyneth Paltrow, Lady Gaga, and Olivia Wilde. And the company says they're not paid to endorse it either. Here's what it does. It's a mirror that you ginormous mirror, I think, that you put on your floor, and then somebody appears in your mirror to teach you cardio. It just shows up like it's sort of like a Peloton bike where you have these programs
exactly
and you pay every month and you have someone lead you in anything from boxing to yoga to bar, dance, cardio, anything, interval strength training. They have so many different exercise classes that on top of the $1,500 for the mirror, you then pay the monthly subscription of the $40. Celebs swear by this. I don't know. I guess it's motivational. Is
yeah.
It?
You know, what's the appeal? You know, you could have it on demand when you want to do it. It's in home. And, you know, it's a controlled semi-social experience with like-minded strangers on the internet, sort of the 2020 way of being, I guess. But there's, you know, again, a lot of people, they're, when you get to gyms, if they're not used to working out, they're very intimidated there. Oh, it's expensive. It takes too much time to go there. They play bad music. Everybody's looking at me. I mean, so there's a lot of other factors that go into this. And this is, seems to be the new thing, like the Peloton and the mirror. It's all of these new things. I don't like the Peloton personally. We have it in the house. I just
think you have one.
Yes, and I think it makes cycling complicated. Clip in, clip out. And it drives me mental. Like, I lose more calories screaming at the bike than I do biking on the bike.
I could see that in you, Steve. That does not surprise me about you for some reason. I'm not sure why.
Right? My anxiety very high.
But what you're doing is incredible at Green Care Medical, and I know that that's you don't we have a lot of time to talk about it this visit, but you'll come back, and thank you for telling us all about the coronavirus and addressing these other medical issues, Dr. Steven Saltzman. What are you, you've been you have how many clinics now?
We have 6 clinics here in Chicago, and probably got 15 clinics in 4 or 5 other states, but we're opening a telehealth platform now where, very much like the mirror, we're doing a telehealth platform where we could do virtual consults by computer.
What's that called?
Telehealth.
Just like, telehealth. If you went online, you could find telehealth?
Yeah. It's going to be Leaf. We're merging to a company, so it's going to be called Leafwell, and we'll be Leafwell MD, but we'll be able to do telehealth consults in other states, and for patients that we already have established, we'll also be able to do those consults as well. And that helps us because we see cancer patients and pretty ill patients. It's very difficult to get to our clinics sometimes because they're so sick. Yeah. So this really opens up another way of us to be able to treat people.
Have
and to
direct contact
out.
With people. If they can't make it in, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But they are located, you said, in location.
Yeah,
Chicago.
here in Chicago. It's in the medical district at Western and Ogden, Justice, Homewood, Palos, Hinsdale, and
the last one is. You get it? He said Justice already. I think we covered him.
Yeah.
Thank you, Doctor. Dr. Steven Saltzman, always good to see you. Thanks for all the advice and the information. We appreciate it. Coming up here, 2 female veterans to talk about an amazing event here in Chicago tonight. WGN, this is Anna DeVlantis, and I'm here in studio with 2 incredible military women who have stepped in here to tell us about this great program going on in Chicago tonight, an event you're going to want to go to and support what they're doing. So let's meet them. Ariel McGrew and Erica Borgren. Now, Erica is a U.S. Army vet. She's a Rhodes Scholar, West Point. You served in Iraq, Republic of Korea. You've also served throughout U.S. Central Command Region with the U.S. Army. And Ariel, Women's Veteran Program Manager for Illinois Joining Forces. You're going to tell us more about Illinois Joining Forces and what that's all about. But thank you for being here, both of you. Appreciate you being on the show.
Thank you for having us.
So tell us about, let's start there, Illinois Joining Forces. We need to know what this is. If you don't already know, this is something you need to know about.
Great. So Illinois Joining Forces is a public-private partnership that really exists to be the no wrong door for veterans trying to navigate the resources that are available across the state of Illinois.
Because that seems like a big deal, right? I mean, because you hear this all the time, that there is a service available to a veteran and their family. And it's just sort of the awareness of going through, you know, just the system of figuring out what there is. So are you one-stop shopping for people to understand the resources?
Yes, we are attempting to be the one-stop shop. It's actually born out of Erica's tenure as when she was the IDVA director.
Oh, well, tell us about that, Erica. So you said, hey, there's a need here. We got to solve it.
That's right. You named the problem, which is that there's a lot of support out there. It's a good problem to have. Lots of folks wanting to support veterans. But it's really hard for veterans to navigate and to find the resource they need in the moment they need it. And I recognize that very strongly. It was a common theme in my early days when I was leading the Department of Veterans Affairs And when I echoed that to the people meeting with me from various nonprofits, they all said yes. And that was the roots, really, of Illinois joining forces at this point now 7 years ago to say, how do you create an ecosystem where you can help veterans get what they need in the moment they need it? And I'm so proud of what Illinois Joining Forces does today to help veterans do that.
Yeah. So are you connected with, has government jumped on board as well? Do you have like the different people from throughout Illinois saying, hey, we're part of this? And is there a website where people can go, or how do they contact you and figure out what's there?
Yeah. So it definitely government organizations at every level. We work with the federal VA, the state VA, county entities, but also all the nonprofits out there, community orgs that aren't truly veterans organizations, but they're just as able to help. Mm-hmm. And veterans' needs are, in many cases, just community needs, resources. So we network and form a kind of community of partners with all of these organizations to make sure that we have the resource when the veteran calls our coordination center. Veterans can do that at any time at 833-INFO-IJF. That's our call center where two awesome vets themselves really help navigate you to the right resource. And not a cold handoff that you think of a call center. It's a deep engagement, almost like case managing, following up, getting the right resource, and really working with you to get what you need, multiple things in many cases.
That matters. It's 1-833-INFO-IJF. We're going to try to get that on our website too, WGNradio.com, because that's an important number to have if you're a veteran or a family member of a veteran. Ariel, you are also a veteran. You're currently serving in the U.S. Army Reserve. Did you see amongst your fellow members of the military, did you see that, hey, this is something I think we really could use? did that occur to you?
Oh, definitely, especially amongst the female veteran service members, just additional support for childcare, additional support in trying to find employment that takes them out of a position of being underemployed, but having equitable employment that's sustainable over the run of their time in service. So it's definitely available for service members in a way that they don't necessarily think about, because reservists have a different challenge than the active duty personnel who transitions out.
What do you mean by that? What's the
If they've never deployed or they don't have 90 days, the active duty space and time that's required, oftentimes they don't qualify for what some veteran service organizations exist for. So that's why it's so important to make sure we go out there and talk to the community partners, because they may be better able to help those service members.
Mm-hmm. And so I guess there's sort of an education component of it too, because people might feel as if, no, I don't qualify for that, or I there's no help for me there. And there is. Right. I mean, do you find that? Does that
often issue? The resource is out there. Almost in every case, the resource is there. It's just hard to find. And I think by the time veterans reach our coordination center, and part of being here is hoping they reach it earlier, is they're worn out by trying the wrong door. No, they didn't accept me because of this discharge or this service status. The beauty of Illinois Joining Forces is we serve all service members, veterans, and their families. We can help you get to whoever's door you need to have opened for you. Mm-hmm. And that is a really unique role we play. It's not directly providing the service, it's getting you what you need, and it makes an awesome difference in people's lives.
I can appreciate that. You're right, it's not the call center, as you pointed out. You have sort of a case manager, and I like that way of saying it, because I understand that. It's like we all know how difficult and frustrating it can be even to handle your own health care and have to go through call centers and different things like that and not feel like you're getting the right answers or get two different answers, and then, you know, just busy lives, you have a hard time really getting a resolution. And for veterans, that's great. So how do you run the organization? Is it volunteers? Are they mostly members of the military who are there? How do you staff it and approach this whole thing?
It's a beautifully small footprint that helps navigate to a wonderfully large system. So we have this call center manned by these veterans themselves who help get you to the resource. But really, the resource is a network that the IJF staff, the Illinois Joining Forces staff, has built over years on the ground in the communities. And so in that sense, you could call it volunteer. There are people doing the work anyway. And we're really kind of working to create better connective tissue across those organizations so we're all aware of and refer to each other, and don't let veterans slip through the cracks.
1-833-INFO-IJF. What kinds of services? I know there's got to be the longest list ever, but there's probably a few on there or some that people don't know about or the most commonly asked about. Tell us about those.
Oh, it runs the gamut from housing, employment, legal.
Yeah.
Often the emergency assistance in the moment, I mean, it tends to be very layered needs. You don't come because I have this one need. I'm dealing with post-traumatic stress. I've got an immediate need in my home that I can't fix this. And now layer on those other health challenges, trying to access my education benefit, and I can't. People come and it's a host of things all together. And so being able to pull that apart, say what's the most urgent need and how do I fix that problem first in order to help the surrounding problem is the big piece.
Yeah.
And then we have the Women Veteran Ambassador Program. Oh. So throughout the entire state, we find women veterans who are hungry, humble, hardworking, and they want to give back. So we have a peer-to-peer support program. So they get trained to be a peer support specialist, and then they do a train-the-trainer. So they, you know, help other women in the community and help them navigate that sea of goodwill that's available in or around them so that they can figure it out.
How is that being received? I would imagine.
Actually, really well.
I would think so. I would think so. That sounds like an excellent, amazing program.
I mean, I think as women veterans, we can both speak for how women veterans tend to kind of experience the world a little bit differently than the standard veterans, right? I mean, you've kind of navigated a system in uniform where you're often the only woman in the room, and who you see as a safe space to be able to ask your question or meet your need in veteran world is then different. And so what Ariel is building in the Women Veterans Program is so important. It's a network of women veterans to help women veterans navigate, and we see that's a critical gap out there.
So do they meet up? Do they just kind of get online in groups, or how does everybody connect?
So our identified appointed women, we do meet. We have a check-in every 3 weeks, and then we have like a quarterly conversation. But now we're going to be doing a podcast.
Oh.
It's called To Your Point.
And to Your Point.
And okay. We're inviting women veterans to come in and tell their story. Instead of the narrative that exists, they get to actually share, like, no, here's my experience. So it's 8 to 12 minutes about their specific experiences, and it's to their point. Like, here's what I know to be true about wearing the uniform and having served.
What about you, Ariel? Why did you decide to serve?
Oh, I graduated at the recession, so.
And you're like, this is a nice opportunity for me.
No, it was an amazing opportunity. I wanted to be able to pay for school. They gave me an opportunity to jump out of airplanes. Who would say no to that?
I kind of would.
I tried to say no to that. I had to do it anyway.
So, and it just opened so many doors. And because sure. It continued to open doors, it's like, you know, I want to continue to give back in this space. What you'll find is everyone's experience is so unique, and we all have different reasons for joining. But when you found your niche, you roll with it.
Yeah, I bet. And when you collect this kind of information about women veterans, I would think that'd be useful for the military, for recruitment, for programming, for just sort of, you know, rolling out, you know, new systems in place. Have you found that? Are you there? You're probably not there yet, but
I think there's a recognition in veteran service space that we need to step up as a veteran support community and really reach out to women veterans differently and uniquely and deliberately. Mm-hmm. I don't know that any one organization has that figured out, but I think the recognition is there, and we're, by virtue of doing that, we are learning about unique needs, the childcare needs that Ariel mentioned earlier, the military sexual trauma that so many women have endured and so now don't trust to bring their issue forward. We're learning those, and we're helping women navigate amidst them.
You know, you talk about things that people don't know about. Just over the weekend, I was with family members, and my nephew is deployed in Afghanistan as part of the Illinois National Guard deployment. And I didn't know about this program, but it was a remarkable program because he's a dad, and his young son is back here in the Chicago area. And they have a program as the Bob Hope Legacy Reading Program. Had no idea it exists, where they allow servicemen and women to go and record a book, them reading a book, like a bedtime story, to their kid back home. And then they arrange everything. You just go to, it's on military bases, it's at USO locations, and they just go and read a book, like their favorite book, whatever book, and then they send it home. And the kid, I got to see the other side where the kid was reading, his little boy Robert was reading it, and it was like, oh my gosh.
That's awesome.
That's a program everybody needs to know about. And it kind of speaks to what you're doing. There are probably hundreds, if not thousands, of programs just like that that people need to sort of connect with and say, that's pretty cool. I'd love to do that, or I'd like to take part in that, or that's going to really help me, you know, to be better and do better in my life. It's remarkable. Tell us again where people go. Connect it, and we're going to get it on our website, WGNradio.com, as
absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. So you can always access 833-INFO-IJF to get help for a veteran in your life. But you should also stop by Andy's Jazz Club tonight for the
right.
event that we're hosting, the Dueling Pianos event. Stop by after work, buy a ticket at the door, and support the great work that we're doing.
Okay, so Andy's Jazz Club, it's tonight 6 to 9, and Andy's is right here on Hubbard, downtown, one of the best jazz clubs in the city.
It's going to be great.
So good. And you'll both be there. Are you going to be playing piano, either of you? No?
No.
No.
Not my skill.
Not there.
You jump out of airplanes. That's enough. I'm already impressed.
But not there.
Can I also tell you, if you know, you can't call in, you can also visit the website, www.illinoisjoiningforces.org. And we do have a text to give function. It's 44321. And you would text VETS ILL.
Okay, now where can you find that information if people didn't write all that down?
They can find it on the website.
Okay, we're going to get that up there. And I so appreciate you sharing the message. And head out to Andy's tonight and support them and what they're doing here for veterans in our community. Thank you so much. Ariel McGrew, Erica Borgren, thanks for your time. Appreciate hearing more about the program. More to come here on WGN, including trending topics and the fate of that coyote. It was not what we had predicted here on WGN Radio. Very different ending for this coyote, and it's a good story coming up. WGN Radio, it is time for trending topics, and Steve Bertrand is in the studio. Lauren Lapka is in the studio. Steve, you and I were dead wrong about what's happening to the coyote.
The coyote lives, right? They called it Mercy, and they're not putting the coyote down because it was wounded.
Is that why they decided?
Well, I'm assuming so, because it had been shot by a BB. I don't know what are they going
to
do with it.
Let's bring you up to speed. This is the coyote that was that bit the little six-year-old near Lincoln Park Zoo and the Peggy Notenbark Museum.
Scared us more than the Wuhan. It was the Wuhan flu of its day.
Totally. For that minute, it was. Yeah. Because we don't see the coyotes attack humans, right? So it was strange to just go over and bite a six-year-old. You and I predicted at that moment that we didn't think there were good things in store for a coyote that bites six-year-olds.
No, not at all. Right.
Because it didn't look good. It just didn't look good. We thought the coyote was going to a farm. And instead, the coyote is not going to be euthanized. And it is going, you're right, named Mercy. They named him Mercy.
But where is it going to go? Do you know?
It's going to go
River North? Or?
The Animal Care Control say it's going to become a ambassador to help people understand coyotes and to live at one with nature. That's part of the program. And so they,
it's
I guess
like
they
a rehabilitation
kind of, facility.
Animal facility, right?
Flint Creek Wildlife Rehabilitation. Coyotes are the most misunderstood wild animal in the Chicago area. And the best way to deal with them is to coexist peacefully with them. Don't shoot them with a baby gun. Don't attack them. They're thinking that might have been one of the reasons this coyote was
absolutely
aggressive.
I'd be mad.
Wouldn't you?
Yeah.
There's BBs permanently in your leg. So anyway, that's the happy ending for that coyote. Very good to hear. Another happy ending for the little dog, the little sweet little dog that was lost in Ohio, found by a police SWAT officer, a Chicago police SWAT officer in downtown Chicago.
What?
Yep, he's at a cafe, so he's a SWAT officer in the Gold Coast, and he sees this little Yorkie just kind of wandering around, and the SWAT officer gets the dog, figures out, takes him to one of the animal facilities. I think it was anti-cruelty. Yes, anti-cruelty. And I think it was chipped. So they figured out.
Oh, good. That is definitely why you should chip
your dog.
Mm-hmm. It's a missing dog from Ohio, reunited. I'm not exactly sure how it got into
Chicago. There's no way it walked the whole way, right?
How does it get to the Gold Coast? That's to be continued.
That sounds like a cheesy G-rated movie.
It does, like a Disney movie.
People would go see. So I don't know if it's in your trending topics, but did you see the federal government's putting out a new rule that's going to make it easier for the airlines to crack down on comfort animals on the plane?
Mm-hmm. What are they going to do?
So
aren't they looking at only allowing dogs?
Service dogs, like certified service dogs, not something that just makes you feel better.
Well, people are getting certifications for emotional support animals a lot easier than they should or getting fraudulent ones online. So I definitely understand. And then, like, the peacock that tried to get
the
on.
Lizards,
you know,
The squirrel. We've had rodents
really?
That
mm-hmm.
qualify as
just about
support
everything.
Animals. And then the ponies.
Yeah.
I understand there are ponies that are officially trained as emotional support animals.
Like mini horses.
Yes, the mini ones. But I just don't understand. I've never seen one on an airplane.
No.
I don't understand how that works.
I was on an airplane a couple of years ago and the woman had just a little tiny dog, like a lap dog or something.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if that was for comfort or if she could do that. Could you do that? Can you bring up a lap dog?
I think you could pay for one if it fits into a certain amount of space underneath the seat. And you do pay for that, you know, that
space.
Yeah,
right.
The space.
But if it's emotional support, you don't have to pay. There's the
trick. There's a little incentive there. I say they get rid of that pay thing.
And the airlines are already reacting favorably to it. They like what they're reading, so...
Okay, you ready for a story about iguanas? That's the next animal story. The National Weather Service warning Floridians about falling iguanas. The coldest air of the season is spreading across even Southern California, seeing 40s and 50s. Nothing for us, but it's like at least 10 to 15 degrees below normal. And so the iguanas are falling off the trees. Once the temperature drops below 45 degrees Fahrenheit, iguanas go into a dormant or cold stunned state. They appear to be dead, but they're not. They remain breathing with their critical body functions still operating, but they fall off the tree.
That is the weirdest thing weird? To happen. I remember reading a story about this before, and I thought it was like the apocalypse.
Yeah.
You know, science is weird.
It's been a long time since you wake up and you're like, hey, how did I get here? Right?
Uh-huh. Right. Like, wait a minute, I was up there, right. Wasn't I?
Well, what year is it?
That hurts, yeah.
That's another Disney movie, I think. The iguana. That'd be a fun one. Okay, StubHub now letting you go into debt in order to get Super Bowl tickets. We were talking yesterday about how expensive they are. $6,800 is the average Super Bowl price for this year, which is up substantially. And so now they're partnering with a financial technology company in order to let you buy them on a payment plan.
Nice. That's just what we need.
I'm not sure. Is there interest? About that.
Bad idea.
Yeah, I don't think that's a good idea. That's a heck of a lot of money for a ticket. Are you kidding me? But you pay it off with interest over a period of time, up to 1 year. They don't say, ranging from 10 to 30%.
Oh, my gosh.
Don't go to the Super Bowl if you got to pay the 10 to 30%.
Yeah, those are the people that are going to get to bet on games, too.
Yes.
Sports gambling is legal, right?
Hey, you want to see the commercials anyway. It's not worth it.
I think the same thing. Although, if the Bears were in it, I'd want to be there. That's all
that's
saying.
True.
Yeah, it just changes. Because
you never know when it's going to happen again.
All right, you guys excited for the Grammys at all?
Well, are they coming up? When are they?
What
this
do you mean,
weekend?
Are they coming up? I thought you were an award show guy. Didn't we go through this?
Yeah, I know. Grammys, not so much.
No, not Grammys. You like the Oscars, the SAGs.
Golden Globes, the SAGs. Globes. I didn't watch the SAGs, but yeah.
Okay, so the Grammys are this weekend. And I guess they don't announce all the acts in advance, but it's leaked out, and all the teeny boppers are super excited because that Korean K-pop group.
Yep.
Oh, BTS.
BTS.
I was like, something. I was thinking Backstreet Boys.
I think Ryan just did a story. They're coming back to Soldier Field this year.
Oh man.
I think it was BTS.
Uh-oh. Yes, I think you're right. I did hear that they're coming here.
It's going to be a travel
nightmare. Yeah, Chicago shows are the last stop in the U.S. for the BTS. But it looks like they're going to be performing at the Grammys as well. And,
and that's this weekend.
This weekend. Yeah.
A lot of screaming wherever they go.
I think it's such
screaming.
Yeah, isn't it?
It is a crazy phenomenon.
I don't quite get them at all, but I they have such a young following. I'm not sure I'm supposed to get them.
Are you guys talking about the Beatles in the 60s or what's going on here?
Yeah, it was sort of the same, isn't it? Every generation sort of has one like this, but they're a Korean pop group.
For me, it was Andy Gibb.
Andy Gibb.
I'm just kidding.
Oh, how deep is your love? They're going to perform. It's interesting that the Grammys does not, though, release its entire list.
What's the purpose?
Out. I don't know.
Well,
don't
you think it's a, come on, you've been.
Surprise?
It's no, but it's an intentional leak. I mean, they'll leak out names and build publicity for it through the week.
Sure. Yeah.
Don't you think?
Otherwise you have to tune in to figure out who's going to perform. Okay. Yeah. Smart. Smart marketing.
I just love how they bring it because they're performing for each other in that concert. And so you see the stars just bring one of their best concerts or a taste of their conference, concert possible. And it's really, I love the Grammys. I would say that's my number one. That's my number one. And plus you get introduced to all kinds of new music maybe that you weren't a fan. And then you're like, wow, I could be a fan. Finally here, we just have one more trending story. Kim Kardashian and heard the name Northwest in a joke and then decided to name her daughter.
That's how that came about.
Nice.
She said it on the Tonight Show. She said she heard that she was on the Tonight Show and she first heard the name during an appearance. Someone said it and that's what happened. So it fits.
So you mean she first heard it as a name or she first learned of it as a direction?
I think it came up in conversation. I'm not sure that's clear. It's such a cool name. Everybody was coming up to me like,
it really wasn't a name.
What's the meaning? And she's like, well, I heard it. And Jay Leno. Jay Leno made it that as a joke. He talked about it. And there you go.
I find it weird that someone like her did not have a bunch of names already picked out from when she was a small child.
Or else do a social media contest or something. Because that seems like a Pirelli too. All right, that's it for Trending Topics. We're going to check in with Rokan and the Rokan Show coming up to see what's happening 3 to 7 today on WGN. And also get your news at the top of the hour from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.